We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw. So you think
welcome to the Atheist Experience. Today is December the 4th in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm your host, Forrest Valkai, and joining me today is J-Mike. J-Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm extremely nervous for a presentation that I have to do for a final, but I'm trying to not think about any of that. So if I said I was good, I'd be lying. I'm pretty terrified. But
I know that feel.
Yeah, it should be fine. I just genuinely don't really know what I'm going to say when I get up there. Like, there's the PowerPoint. And those words there, and I'm done. And did give me an A.
I remember the last time I had to do an assignment for like a statistical analysis class. And I was like, I didn't have any serious data over the research that I was supposed to be doing. Because I was just like, just hadn't gotten around to it. I was like, here's some numbers. I did this with them and it came out bad.
Yeah.
That's my class. Thank you so much for watching. Hey, if you're just tuning in for the first time, the Atheist Experience is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. We got a great show for you today. We already got lines filling up. We got, oh my gosh, a lot of people calling in. We did a brief TikTok live stream thing before we started. So like, hopefully that attracted some new peoples to come watch. It looks like the lines are already almost full. So I'm going to jump right in before I stop talking so we can get more people in here. J-Mike, do you have a particular preference? I'm looking at line number 3 here, and it looks pretty cool to me.
Let's go for it.
Sweet. All right. So we're going to start off the show with Muhammad from California. Pronouns are he, him. Says that we have fundamental assumptions that humans are special or unique, and you find that naturalism is dangerous because it takes that away. Muhammad, how are you today? And is that a fair summary of what you were calling in
about? Good, my brother. Yes, that's what I want to talk about.
Radical. Did you want to elaborate at all on that, or can we just jump off from that? Because I immediately have a million things I want to say, but I want to have you call in and just sit there and listen to me. I want to hear from you too, you know?
Of course, I have stuff to say. So, yeah, like, you know, lately I've been, like, really getting into, like, kind of existentialism, you know, like, looking into the works of, like, researching on, like, you know, Kierkegaard and Nietzsche and these kind of philosophers. And, you know, it's like, it's really scary because, you know, it's like, I feel like existentialism is, it really, like, it talks about, like, the really deep stuff, like, those deep, like, yeah, like, the deepest assumptions we have about things. And, you know, I feel that, you know, civilization, society, it's built on these kind of assumptions that humans are unique and humans are special. And I feel like when you have that realization, that it's scary because if you take that away, it's like what foundation, what fundamental assumption can we build on to have society and civilization? And I feel like, kind of this whole thing with...
I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were still speaking. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please continue.
Yeah, that, you know, I feel like this whole thing with, AI nowadays, and like kind of the thing with that movie, what's it called? Ex Machina, something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that movie is really scary because like the implications of it is that, you know, oh, humans, like there's nothing unique about us. There's nothing, you know, special that we're just like any other creature, any other, organism. And there's no fundamentally no difference between us and anything else. And I feel like that's going down like this naturalist kind of way of seeing things where,
I feel like if you're truly a natural, you know, it's scary. The implications are very scary because it's like, well, so that, there's nothing special about it.
Can I ask you about that? Because that's where I'm confused. Because like from my understanding of the domain of naturalism, it's very big. So there's a position called moral naturalism. Are you familiar with that?
No.
You should, if this interests you, you should look into moral naturalism because a lot of people who call themselves naturalists or use that term, which, you know, to define it specifically might be a headache. I mean, you probably have to ask somebody what they mean by the term, but a lot of them are moral naturalists. Like they think morality is objective, for example. I don't share the same views, but I don't, main point being is I don't see, it seems like your view on naturalism is an entails nihilism. And I don't really understand that.
I also like, there's a few things there that jump out to me. And so like, just for context, like this isn't about me, but just so you know, like what you're talking about, you're coming from this point of just studying existentialism. I actually really vibe with nihilism, especially cosmic nihilism. That's one of my favorite schools of philosophy. And I also am, as a person who I'm a biologist, I study biology for a living. I have several degrees in biology. Naturalism is my bread and butter. Like understanding that, you know, the same processes that affect me also affect everything else. And there's no evidence of anything special or supernatural. That's a big part of my understanding of the universe. And also you said that, you know, humans aren't special and we're no different than any other organism. I agree with that wholeheartedly. We are not special. We're just another organism. And if this entire planet were wiped out tomorrow by some horrible cosmic accident, nothing changes for, you know, any other galaxy anywhere else. Any, you know, Jupiter's just fine. So I don't think that I or humanity or this planet or anything else in the universe is special because we are the same thing as everything else. And yet, I still think that I'm a good person and I still do good things and I still try to make the world shiny and better just because that's, I think, the right thing to do. So like, I have several questions about what you're talking about as far as like, you know, this idea that if we don't see humans as something special, you know, we would have some scary end result of that. I would challenge that not only from a philosophical standpoint, but also from a cultural standpoint. And I would love to get into that, but I want to hear just your response to just what J. Mike and I said first. And then after that, I'll talk a little bit about, you know, different cultural perspectives on humanity that I think is really relevant.
Yes, sir. So, you know, I haven't heard of, you know, moral, you know, like naturalist, kind of a moral naturalist. And, you know, like, you know, I like to be kind of enlightened and kind of know new things. You know, I just say, though, that, you know, look, like us humans, we need to have value, right? Like we can't just think that we have no worth, that we're nothing. You know, that's very
dangerous. To be clear, I didn't say that we have no worth or that we're nothing. I said that we are no more special than anything else, so we shouldn't put ourselves on a pedestal. Of course, I'm going to value human life over other life because I live in this society, but that's only in terms of like making sure that life is hospitable for us, not in terms of like taking away from other life to try to benefit us. You know what I mean? Yeah, so like, I'm not saying humans are worthless. I'm just saying we're not that special.
This might help clear things up for me. And this is just a question. I don't want to derail the questions that Forrest wants to ask you, but this might help me for the remainder of the conversation. Is it important to you for like an external type of purpose? Is that what you care about? Because I can go into why I think that has very uncomfortable outcome. Mohammed,
did we lose you?
We might have, man.
It says he's still on the line. If you're there, we can't hear you. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Hey, can you hear us?
Is this about an extrinsic purpose or goal type of thing? I'm just trying to make sure I'm tracking your concern.
No. I'll be honest with you. This is where I'm coming from. That I see that us humans, right, that we have these fundamental assumptions that, you know, kind of this whole thing with AI right now and all that, it's bringing these fundamental assumptions to the surface, right? And what it's bringing to the surface is like these beliefs that we're special and that we derive value from that we are unique. And I feel like if you take those beliefs away, where do we derive value from? Because
all right, so this is great. That's actually exactly what I wanted to get to. That's perfect. So really quickly, just you know, I'm assuming, you know, okay. So let me ask you this: it says you're a theist on the call screen. Do you have a particular religious belief that you would feel comfortable espousing?
Yeah, like, you know, I'm like a Muslim. I was raised a Muslim.
Okay, cool. But I'm not here. So I'm pretty sure. Sorry. I don't think that you're here trying to convert me to Islam. I don't think you're true. You're espousing, you know, any of that. I just or proselytizing at all. But like, I just want to understand where you're coming from in terms of your worldview, because I'm pretty sure that in Islam there is a concept of something very akin to the Garden of Eden, that it's like that we were made in a sort of pristine, pure, perfect form, and then we ate from the tree of knowledge and were kicked out of paradise. Is there something like that in Islam? I don't want to, you know, I'm not too familiar with it.
Yeah, there's like the Adam and Eve story. You know, honestly, even myself, like, I don't know it like depth like that, you know, but
that's fine. I just want to make sure that like I'm on the same page, because I'm 99% sure that it's pretty much the same story as in the Christian Bible, but I know there's a couple of differences, but I'm not familiar with them, and I don't want to say a bunch of shit about your religion and then have it be like, well, you're very wrong about these things. So if we can, you know, start from that, you know, take a look at that story. What that story is at its core, no matter what the details are, is that we were made to have dominion over this land. We were put here in a special position, and then we blew it, and we were kicked out of paradise, and now we have to, you know, struggle and suffer and starve and die and all these things. And, you know, looking at life that way, it makes sense that you would want to say, oh, we're very special and we're very unique, and we're the ones that we should be framing our society around. And a lot of Western culture is built upon that kind of world, because a lot of Western culture is upon, you know, are built by people who were raised in Abrahamic religious culture. So even though I wouldn't say that, you know, America is a Christian nation founded on Christianity or anything like that, for sure the people who founded America had that kind of mentality, because that's the kind of culture they grew up in. Compare that, for example, to there's a phenomenal book called Braiding Sweetgrass by a lady named Kimmerer. I don't remember her first name off the top of my head, but she is a citizen of the Potawatomi Nation. So she's a Native American, the Potawatomi tribe, and she talks about the foundational myths of her society. And one of them is the story of Sky Woman. And I'm going to, you know, synthesize this down just the same way that I did the Garden of Eden. I'm going to leave a lot of stuff out. But long story short, this woman fell from the sky, and the earth was all water, and the animals like stopped her from falling to death and like protected her. And then they found some land for her to live on. And she spread the land out on the back of a turtle, I believe it was. And she had seeds in her hand. She planted the seeds. And that is where all the plants and everything on the earth grew. So she, with the help of the creatures that were already here, made dry land and made the earth, the wildlife around us. And so now in that culture, with that kind of worldview, with that kind of framework, even if you don't believe this is true, you know, with that kind of framework in your mind, you no longer see humans are this special thing and the whole earth was made just for us and we have domain over the land and we broke the rules and got kicked out of paradise. No, we're the youngest ones here. We have the most to learn from everybody else. We helped make this place, and this place is a beautiful garden for everybody to live in, for everybody to thrive from. Nobody owns anything, and we're all benefiting from this thing that was made with everybody's cooperation and help. So do you see how looking at these two different lenses, not that these are the two ends of the spectrum, there's a lot of other ideas, but like looking at the world from these two different worldviews, two different lenses, you have a very different understanding of what words like special and important and things like that mean. We're not special. We're not the most important ones here. We're just another animal. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that we have a different place in the society, not as a ruler, but as a cooperator, as a brother and a sister. And this is, of course, like I said, this is just one example of one other culture that I remember off the top of my head, because I remember reading a book about it. But like me as a scientist, I have a very similar way of thinking. You know, we evolved about 200,000 years ago from other apes. We're just other, like humans are just another species of great apes that happen to do some really cool stuff. But we need this world to live. We need biodiversity. We need functional ecosystems. We need other life to survive. If we destroy this planet and wipe out half the life on it and kill a bunch of plants and animals and destroy, then we are also going to die, because we rely on those things for food and water and oxygen. You know, the term ecosystem services is a really cool thing to look into in ecology. This the work that other life does to make this planet habitable. So I don't see us as special. I see us as cooperative partners in this ecosystem, in this biosphere called Earth. That doesn't mean that I think human life is worthless. It just means that I don't put us on a pedestal and sacrifice other life and other values and other, you know, organisms for our benefit. Does that make sense?
Like, I didn't keep track of everything you were saying.
I said a lot of shit. I didn't expect you to. It's fine.
Yeah, look, like, this is my only point. You know, I'm coming at this from a moral perspective. I'm not here trying to debate theology and, you know, I'm just saying that, look, this is what I feel. That,
yeah, but we, know, already showed, we already showed, but hold on real quick, Muhammad, we already showed why that moral concern wouldn't be an issue, right? Because naturalism doesn't entail nihilism, doesn't entail anti-realism. In fact, if you look at the Phil Paper survey from 2006 or 2020, either one, majority of the people that answer the meta-ethical questions of whether or not they're a moral realist or not, majority of those say yes, and 73% answer atheist on that. Not to say atheism is true or something, but just to express that's a whole shit ton of atheists that are saying that they believe in objective morality. I don't, not saying that I or any naturalist has to. The whole point of that is that if you have this, because in the call screener notes, it said that you think naturalism is dangerous, and then you seem to affirm that by bringing up the moral thing, which I apologize for cutting you off so quick, but I don't really see the concern, right? Because there are positions, whether they work or not, it's a different question, but it doesn't entail that you have to have this like nihilistic account of life. And then even if it did, I mean, I just seem to care about what's true. I don't really like this whole, is there utility? Do we look at ourselves special? Like, I don't really, that might be useful for some people. That's not useful for me at all. I don't really care about that. I care about like whether or not this is true, right? My values are going to depend on a lot of what I think is true.
You know, I definitely get that. You know, I see it like this, that, you know, there's a verse in the Quran that says, you know, that Allah, he honored the children of Adam, right? And he like preferred them over, I don't know the verse exactly, but it's talking about how like God honored the children of Adam and stuff like this. And I feel like, you know, scripture, what it does is you can derive that we have inherent value from scripture, right?
I could derive that from Harry Potter. I could derive that from book. I can derive that from any book, Muhammad. The point is the concern I have is not whether or not you can derive utility or value from what someone utters, right? What a speaker utters. I don't really care. Like, I care about whether or not what they're saying, right? What the utterance is, whether or not that tracks or corresponds to reality in some. So like, sure, I could take values from like Cat in the Hat or something. Like, I don't really see what it is that matters. Because especially when you open the frame of metaphorical or allegorical, like I don't constrain my reasoning. I mean, you can pick anything you want. You can read anything you want out of that. So I just don't know why that should have a tier list like above where truth would lay, right? Wouldn't you want the values that you derive from to be true?
Sure, of course.
So how do we go about
like,
that?
Again, hello?
Yeah, I was just saying, how do we go about that? Like, because if you want to cite the, I kind of want to cut it off at the source in a sense, and not like you derive this value and you know, look at what this does. It makes society work, or whatever the entailment that you have is. I care about if in fact what you're pulling from has any good reason to think it's true. And so I'm curious on like what method it is you use when you look at that to say that it's valuable. Why you should care? Why I should care? Why anybody should care?
You know, like. I feel like, you know, I've been, you know, I've kind of like, you know, I've thought about, you know, I kind of take like, you know, Jordan Peterson's position on like, you know, kind of our morals, like, are they faith-based? Are they, you know, based? Is the basis for them like rationality, like kind of like logic? And, you know, I feel like, you know, for me, I see that, you know, I think.
Muhammad, you said Jordan Peterson. You do realize that Jordan Peterson thinks that there are things that are more true than true just by being a story about something, right? Archetypal narratives and whatnot. I don't really see like what is Jordan Peterson doing? If he already has this like ambiguous notion of truth, we're going to talk past each other really quickly because I don't take his notion of what true is. And if you look to Jordan Peterson, it seems like you're going to be able to make a lot of these mental gymnastics in order for you to say, well, it's more true than true. And what is it that you mean by meaning? Or what is it that you mean by is, right? Like none of that's useful. It's like, is there a methodology? You talked about assumptions. I'm all about assumptions, but I'm all about testing our assumption, right? Could we do that with the assumptions that you think we take? Can we test them to see if they correspond reality in any way?
Yeah, look, I get what you're saying. I'm not like denying it or like saying, hey, this is not, you know, I like, you know, do you, you know, I'm just saying this, that,
I feel like a religious worldview, Islam, Christianity, it gives human beings inherent value. You could derive that from these scriptures, but what other source can you derive
that inherent value? Muhammad, if you assume it's true, why is it true?
That also, like, the, you know, you're talking about, you know, you can derive that humans have inherent value from the scripture. You don't need to get it from that scripture. There's plenty of other places you can get that. Just you know, caring about other people gives you inherent value. But again, as I said earlier, you don't need to think as well. Like, I certainly think that humans have inherent value in the same way that I think anything has some inherent value of being a thing. But I don't think that humans are any more valuable than anything else. The only reason that I care about human life is because I live in a society amongst other humans. And so, like, I am, you know, evolutionarily programmed to care a little bit more about my own species and to value human life. That's, you know, it's not like it's something that I just don't care, but I guess I have to. It's that I care about other people. I care about their happiness. I care about their well-being. I care about who they are as a person and making sure that they're comfortable. And that's where I base my morality on is human well-being. But I don't need to think that we're special or more important than anything, or that the universe should revolve around us or anything like that. So like that, I don't understand why you need this thing that you're saying.
Or from text that expresses dominion over women, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't see the value. Because you're just going to talk, oh, this book, great, that's fine. There's a book. I see things that don't align with my value. So I'm not going to make that assumption. I'm going to go, how can I test this to be true? And then we would come to the fact of this thing that I think is horrible is true, but I have to accept that it's true. But I'm not seeing, like, it just seems like we're skipping the whole step, right? The whole, like, important thing to do, which is, how do I know the thing that I base my values on, or that I think reflects the reality around me, is actually reflecting the reality around me and is actually reflecting true values out there? Like, how do you do that, right? You can't just say a book says a thing. Lots of books say things.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, like, you know, I said that, you know, ultimately it is faith-based, right? And it's not based in, like, kind of scientific or
over then. Rational. Muhammad, kind of. then it's done.
Yeah,
then it's over.
That's the whole
right?
thing
there's no point in having a conversation anymore. We just might as well move on. If you only have faith and you've just said it's not a rational thing, then you don't have good reasons to believe what you believe. And so that's fine. But if you're talking about value and all these things that matter, but then somehow turn around to say, like, there's no logic or reason, it's just faith. Well, why not take faith on any other set of values that conflict with those set of values, right? In virtue of what are the ones you're taking on faith better or the right ones in compared to the ones that I take? Let's just say I take some on faith, right? It seems like we have a disagreement and we have to enter something in, like evidence or an argument or some type of consideration. Otherwise, if we just stop there, it's not to be rude. It's just literally we can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Unless we want to open the conversation back up to evidence.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously I feel like we all have faith in something that I don't think, like, someone's just a purely, you know, he just bases everything, all of his, just every belief in logic or science. I don't think that's true. And you know, I see that, you know, science is, you know, I don't want to get into another topic, but, you know, I see that scientific knowledge, like that source of knowledge, it's limited. You know, it can't tap into everything.
So,
same.
So hold on a second, because, like, we've been, so Muhammad, I'm sorry, we've been going for 20 minutes, and I've got to move on to the next caller, but I just want to ask just really quickly, as succinctly as you can, because I want to make sure that you are well represented. You have the last word. I don't want to, like, you know, say, so put words in your mouth. What J. Mike just said was really important, and I want to just hear your answer to it. What's the difference if you say you have a faith-based position that humans have inherent value, and I say I have a faith-based position that humans don't have inherent value? How do we know which one of us has a better position? Is there a way to reconcile that? Is there a way to find which one is true or which one's better? Or does it fall apart because we both have a faith-based position?
Yeah, or do we just kick rock?
Yeah, like, you know, I can't answer that right now. Like, I have to, like, reflect on it and think.
That's an amazing answer. That's an amazing answer. That's an amazing answer.
Yeah. So I tell you what, man, I've got to move on to the next caller because we've been going for 20 minutes and we have a limited time on the show. But I encourage you, please do reflect on it and think about it. And if you want to call back in another show, I usually only do show once a month. I don't know how much J Mike does it, but if you can try to call him when we're on, that would be cool. I'd love to.
I'll be on next week. I'll take your call next week.
There you go. Yeah. If you want to call in next week and talk to J Mike about it more, I'm sure we would love to talk to you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you so much, Muhammad. I really appreciate you calling in. A super nice dude. All right. So if you like what we do and you would like to support us, there's a couple of ways you can support the Atheist Experience and the ACA. Number one, you can become a member of this channel for as little as 99 cents a month. Just click the join button down below the video, and that'll give you access to special chat emojis. Everybody in the chat, please drop some of those special chat emojis so people can see them and be jealous and become members. The Atheist Experience is just one of the shows put on by the ACA, so make sure to check out our other shows as well. We've got Secular Sexuality on Thursdays starting at 7 p.m. Central. I think I'll be on the next one. We've got Truth Wanted, which airs on Fridays at 7 p.m. We've also got our Sunday shows, which are Talk Heathen at 1 p.m. Central, and then the Nonprofits right before this one at 3 p.m. Central. And you can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/Patreon/AXP. Those are all things that you can do to help out the atheist community of Austin, help us make a show this or bad shows like this, depending on what you think. with that, we have, oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're stacking up.
There's, wow. It's literally the last time I looked. Okay, so I've got two of them that I really like. I'm looking at either number 12 or number 17.
You're in the hot seat. You got
I want to make sure I'm not just completely. Okay, so I'll take number 12 then. We're going to talk to Shape of God, pronouns he, him, calling in from Texas. Says secularism is a form of faith. Can I call you Shape? Is there a shorter name I can give you, or do you prefer Shape of God? Also, how are you? Hello.
Oh,
we call him Sog.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was by mistake.
Okay.
Sheep of God. I meant Sheep of God.
It still would be
Sog. Sheep, like
still
a lamb.
Still is going to be Sog. That's
yeah.
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm Sog.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, so can I call you Sheep, or do you prefer anything else?
My name is Emmanuel.
Emmanuel. Okay,
there
cool.
There we go.
You say secularism is a form of faith. What do you mean by that? Yeah, I remember you. Yeah. I remember you were the slave of Christ at that point, and now you're the sheep of God. Both of these sound horrible, but I'm not going to get into that because I want to talk about your point here. You said that secularism is a form of faith. What do you mean by that?
Let me start with a question, and I'll make an argument. My question is, do you have a psychological knowledge?
Psychological knowledge?
Do you know, like, psychology? Yeah. Do you have, like,
a tiny bit? So when I was getting my degree in education, I had to take a couple of psychology classes, but I would not call myself a psychologist, an expert in any way. But I know a thing or two about it, enough to pass a couple of classes.
I took one class
because there you go. I've been seeing this, atheist shows and stuff, and it has it's been having a reverse effect on me. So the more
driven closer to faith because of us
atheist shows.
Yeah,
the more that I see atheist shows, the more that I became more and more firm believer. I don't know why. That's just like weird.
I don't know why either.
Let me ask a question real quick. When you watched more atheist shows, was it like more evidence fell out of the sky onto your lap? Because I'm not really sure how, right? Like, how does that work? I don't get it.
No, in a sense that, I used to watch Matt a lot. And the more that he quotes the Bible and he's trying to show the errors in the Bible, the more I start reading the Bible. So the more that I know what my doctrine is.
Interesting. So what do you mean by secularism as a form of faith?
Oh, so a form of faith is like you have some beliefs and some principles. So you have like a common, moral ethics, basically, I think so. So what I think is, for example, in Christianity, even though Christians are different, they all we all have like a same form of not just dogmas, but also we have similar views on ethics. And most people in the worldview of secularism have this common thing. And I think it's like a form of faith because, I think faith is like evidence for things which are not seen. And I think faith is evidence. I don't think faith is believing in something that's not necessarily visible. Or I don't believe that faith is believing in something that you don't have evidence for. I believe is faith is evidence by itself. So
faith is evidence by itself. Okay, so let's address that then. This is something that I've said on this show before, and I'm happy to say it again. I'm here in my office right now, and over there in that corner, there is a closet. And inside that closet, there is a goblin. His name is Roland. He eats Subway sandwiches, and he grants wishes when he feels
Roland.
Like it. I have complete faith in Roland the Closet Goblin. Does that make him real?
No, that doesn't make him real, but that's faith.
Is that evidence? Is that evidence that Roland is real? Could I not then say I have good, strong evidence in Roland because I have faith in him?
Okay. By the way, you're putting out, two different things here. So
no,
what I mean
out.
Is,
he's
I didn't explain
out.
What I mean.
Well, hold on, but hold on. It's important.
You said faith is evidence.
He's pointing out the equivocation that you're making.
Yeah,
right?
But you're just making an example out of deception. That's deception. Believing in something that's not real.
You said that faith is evidence. So if I have evidence in something, I then, you know, I or if I have faith in something, then I then have evidence for it. That's what you said just a minute ago. Did I mishear you?
No. You're correct. You heard what you heard, but that's like falsified.
So then what's the difference if I say I have strong faith in Roll in the Closet Goblin? Why is that not evidence? But if I say I have faith in God, that is evidence. What's the difference between those two things?
Because what you just said, what you, you know, you have a goblin, that's not scriptural, but having a faith in God.
What if I read about him in a book?
Scripture is evidence.
Yeah. What if I read about him in a book?
The only copy of that book is actually in my office. And so he is taking it from scripture.
It's true. It's true. He's got the book about Roland and I read it. And that means it's scriptural and I have complete faith in him. Why does it break down? Why does that not work?
I guess it's the same thing. I agree with you. I think you mean it's like this doesn't necessarily mean it's superior than the other one that you're just making.
No, I mean,
a lot of sense.
That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is just because you believe in something and just because you read it in a book and just because that book is very old and just because other people also like that book and just because the book or the belief or whatever brings meaning to your life, or just because the book or the belief or whatever got you out of a bad situation, or just because the book or the belief or whatever turned your life around when you were in a bad way, no matter what, none of that makes it true. The thing that makes a thing true is it being true. And if it were true, it would have actual evidence, something that I can test, something I can verify, something that we can all go look at. So for me to just say, I read about a book about this goblin and now I believe in this goblin and my life has changed because of this goblin. And the more shows I see that say that there are no goblins, the more I know for sure there's a goblin. Not one single bit of that actually means that there's a goblin in my closet. None of that is evidence.
Okay. By the way, let me ask you a question. Do you think you are a body?
That's a whole different topic, and I want to stick to what we're on right now. We can get to that later.
Yeah, because what was just
explained. I agree with you, so I don't want to debate what you're saying.
Hold on, real quick. When he gave, so let me like break this down, right? Because what we have is we have a belief, right? A belief in a proposition, right? A proposition like you think God exists or Roland the Goblin, right? There's a belief there. Now we can parrot everything that you use. Force can parrot it as well. And what this shows is that there's nothing actually justifying it, right? There's nothing justificatory for the actual proposition that gains us to knowledge. If me and you both agree that in order for our belief to become knowledge, we have to justify it, right? It has to be justified and it has to be true. I can't just guess and get, you know, I think the US will win today or something and then I'm wrong and then they're right or they do win. Doesn't mean I had justification. It means I guessed. There's a huge distinction here that when you believe in a proposition, you have an attitude towards it and you think it's true, but we're missing the next thing, which is something that justifies it so we can count it as knowledge. And I'm not seeing how, well, let me just ask you, do you agree that it's not enough to just have the belief and confidence in the belief or trust in the belief to count it as knowledge? Would we agree on that?
I agree with you. I completely agree. Yeah, I completely agree, but that's not the point here.
This is important. This, when you say that, what you said is, I don't have anything that justifies the belief. Thus, when you call like your confidence faith as evidence, it's not that, because it's not something that justifies it. And you just accepted that. So now when you're talking about faith, clearly you're not talking about something that justifies the claim to be true, right? See, this is going to fall apart quickly, because you're just admitting I don't have anything that justifies it.
Yeah, but you just made a presupposition and saying that you think God is a personal being, and God, according to the Christianity doctrine, is not even a personal being. You just said that there's a supernatural force out there, and believing in that without enough evidence is not a good, you know, valid argument.
But I never
made that argument.
No, anything that you believe in, you just believe in it. You need to justify the claim. You can't just say the confidence I have in believing it, which is faith, right? Just really trusting it and having a lot of confidence. That in and of itself isn't a justifier. That's the point. It is not a justifier. If that's the case, then Roland has a justifier. By parity of reasoning,
let me give you an example. One time, you know, I have experienced things that justified what I actually believed. You know, there were like a couple of times where I took the book and I read scripture, and the power that was in that scripture actually became manifested in someone's life. And for example, let me give an example. One time I was teaching from the book of Acts, right? Acts chapter 2. It was in Mennonite church. I was not even in the United States at the time. I was in my home country. And I felt like, you know, laying hands on someone else. And that someone got filled with the Holy Ghost. And after a week, after a month, they told me that they saw the Lord, his face, and all of his image.
So what do you feel about all the people who are Muslim, all the people who are Jewish, all the people who are Hindu, all the people who believe in indigenous tribal religions from around the world, all the other religions all around the world who have the exact same story as you? I was doing this sacred ceremony. I was reading from this scripture. I did this thing and it changed this person's life. They saw our God or gods. They felt the exact same experiences. Like, why is it that every other religion has the exact same story?
Oh, and naturalism. Don't forget me.
And
I went to the woods and I smoked a joint, yep. And naturalism revealed itself to me in such a way that I can't be wrong. I had a naturalistic experience.
For sure.
So I can do that too. So anyway, answer.
What I think is all spirits, you know, are not from God. So they're like deceiving spirits, and they're like a counterfeit where Satan uses like the same formula or the same power.
So how do you know that the one that you and your friend felt when you did this ceremony wasn't a counterfeit spirit? If all these other religions have the exact same experience and they all feel the exact same thing, and some of them are fake, how do you know that yours is not fake?
Yeah, because the mind did not contradict what apostles have preached. And all the other religions actually contradicted each one of them. For example, take Islam. They don't believe that God could manifest in the flesh. That's contrary to apostles' doctrine, the basics of Christianity.
Yes, and the apostles' doctrine is contradictory to Islam, which means the apostles' doctrine is the counterfeit one, because we all know that Islam is true, right?
Yeah, but they're not authorized by God. They're created by
man. It says in their book that they are.
Man-made religion.
It's scriptural.
Yeah, but I could write a book and say that this is God speaking. That's different from
exactly. Yes. You just hit the nail on the head, dude. Woo. That's exactly right. Anybody can write a book and say anything about it, and it doesn't mean that it's true. And if you had an experience and 10 billion other people had the same experience, and you say they're all wrong because my book says they're wrong, and they all say he's wrong because my book says they're wrong, you don't have a valid argument or a valid reason to believe what you're saying. You need actual evidence.
Forrest, you're not listening.
I'm listening to everything you said.
I feel like...
What part of what you just said did I misrepresent?
You misrepresented what I said. Okay.
What exactly did I misrepresent?
Okay. We both just had the same realization at the same time. For no good reason at all. Okay. We both were like, wait, that was just a coincidence. You're right.
Okay. Here's what I think, right? So, you know, I don't actually know what you actually believe, whether you think like... You didn't actually address my question. You said that's a different question. So I believe I live in the body, right? I don't believe that I'm the body. I believe I live in a body.
Oh,
right?
Man. Yeah, so, no, I didn't address this because this is a totally different conversation than what we were having. We were trying to talk about faith and evidence, and now you're going in a totally different direction.
And Sheep, we got to stick on a topic because there's other callers that are waiting, right? We don't want to go on six different topics. Stick to one. You can call back next week. I think you've admitted this is your second time talking with us now. So we will go through all these points. We're here for as long as we're here. So I don't really... You know, see the point of dodging the last thing, which pretty much showed that you don't have a justifier. When you call faith evidence or some type of justification, someone else can parrot that same type of reasoning. And it seemed that you understood that towards the end, which is why we had the exact same realization when you spoke the words out of your mouth that you were getting it.
But you just equivocated.
I would just go back over and listen to this conversation. I don't know that we need to do anything else.
We're going to go ahead and move on. But Sheep, I appreciate you calling in again. We're going to go and move on to the next call because we got a lot of people waiting. And I think we've kind of been through this whole thing with you. If you want to call back another week and talk to us again about whatever the other thing was, that's totally fine. But we can't have, you know, we've already been doing 15 minutes of this and we can't do any more.
This is a no gish gal zone.
Yeah, exactly. Man. Oh, I'm glad that, you know, maybe he'll go back and rewatch that call and listen to himself say that, yeah, but I have this book that says this thing, which means I'm right and anybody can write anything in a book. And maybe if he forgets that he's talking, he'll be like, that's bullshit because my book says that, you know, he gets stuck in a loop with himself forever. If you're watching this and you want to watch more things like this, you should know that the ACA hosts several other shows other than just The Eighth Experience, including The Nonprofit, Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, and Talk Heathen. And if you didn't catch all of the other shows that were going on last week, here's a little taste of the things you might want to go back and watch.
You meet the most interesting, wonderful people doing this kind of work. You really do. I mean, I could be doing a show about accounting, I guess, or something. So glad to be here talking about sex dolls and all kinds of wildness with y'all.
And this one says, ex-Christian Aaron is just one ex away from Pornhub. Maybe then she can get out of the garage on those cold nights. Now, first of all, I choose to be in my garage. That is my studio.
They even elected a conservative culture warrior to become the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he's from the Archdiocese of the Military Services, because there's nothing better than a warrior for Jesus to lead us, right? Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition.
Your God created me to not believe in your God. So your God created me to burn. So your God created me solely for the purpose of being tortured for all of eternity. Yes or no?
Correct. I think you have a correct
Cool. Disagree. Your God can eat my shorts.
You're avoiding the point because you don't want to address the Bible and its views on genocide. So instead you decide to bring trans people into this. Do you really think that trans people are on par with the evil of genociding a population?
It says, Dan smells, John probably smells, in parentheses, I have no idea. MD Aware is unaware that he smells. Aaron used to smell, but only after being shamed into bathing, which she does reluctantly.
Hey!
If you can arrange to be in the Austin area between December 16th and 18th, consider joining us in the studio as this live studio audience at the ACA Freethought Library for live broadcasts of Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, Talk Heathen, and The Atheist Experience. Doors open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, at noon on Sunday. Parking is just wherever you can find a legal spot. After the whole lot is full, it's going to be hard. So get there early. If you can't make it there this month, that's totally fine, because we'll continue the broadcast live from the library the last week of every single month, except for this one. We're doing a little early because of the holiday season. So keep watching the show and check our website, atheist-community.org, for news and information as we expand our in-studio offerings in the near future. And speaking of being in the local Austin area, we're currently looking for additional talented hosts and crew members for all of our shows. So if you are interested in assisting in the studio with either video or with hosting or anything like that, and you can be live in the studio as well if you're around the Austin area, email us at tv@atheist-community.org, and the production team will be in touch with you just as fast as they can be. We've got, holy crap, so many calls left, and we've been going real long on these calls, so I don't know where to even begin.
Brian's really looks okay, but you can go with whichever one.
Which one were you saying?
I said Brian looks like one that I'm curious.
Line number one.
I'm more curious on your response, honestly. But
yeah. I don't think I would give one that's too crazy, but sure, I'm down with that one too. So yeah, let's go with Brian, pronouns are he, him, calling in from Canada, asking what kind of evidence would make us believe. Brian, can you hear us? And are you okay? How are you?
I can. I'm good, thanks.
Awesome, perfect. I'm awesome, okay, man. Thanks for asking. So do you want to elaborate a little bit on, like, did you have like a lead up to that, or are you just asking generally, like, what would stop us from being atheists?
Oh, sure. So one of the more important arguments against the existence of God is the issue of evidence, that atheists believe there's no clear evidence for the existence of God, and evidence is important. So my question is, what kind of evidence would convince you or anyone to become a believer? What kind of evidence are you talking about?
J-Mac, do you want to go first?
Example?
Yeah. Novel predictions, preferably testable. If we're going to put this in a empirical domain, then it'd be great to have some type of novel predictions or future prediction we don't know of, generate some expectation. In the general scheme of things, especially when I talk to theists in the philosophical realm, they generally offer what are called like a priori arguments, or just like deductive arguments. And I'd be okay with that if someone could offer me one. I just don't think that they ultimately work. And then the third would be on a worldview comparison, that if we can just compare, say, naturalism to theism and look at like the explanatory breadth and depth versus its simplicity, its unification of what it posits in its theory, and then not adding like foreign, you know, ontology or things like spirits and jinns and genies to our worldview if they don't serve any explanatory role. So those would be like kind of the three things that I'd be looking for.
Yeah, I would say it'd be okay. Similar. It's just that I stand by the idea that like if I were to go back to a couple hundred thousand years ago and show some very early human my cell phone, they would probably think that I was a god. You know, this is the most amazing, miraculous thing they've ever seen. So like, I don't know of a way that I could distinguish, even if I had really solid, good evidence of something unbelievable and incredible and otherworldly, I couldn't say for sure that it wasn't some time traveler. I couldn't say for sure it wasn't aliens. I couldn't say for sure it wasn't, you know, some other supernatural being. And maybe if a genie or if a fairy or if something like that exists and then they do some things, maybe I would think that was what that, you know, so I can say the easy answer I would give is like actual positive evidence of something that, you know, is just completely beyond the realm of science and also cannot be within the realm of science, because we discover things are outside the realm of science all the time. That's what makes new science. That's how quantum mechanics came about, you know? We were like, oh, we need new math for this, it turns out. But I don't know for sure what I could see that would definitely definitively be, okay, this can only possibly be a god, let alone the god of the Bible. However, as other atheist hosts of this show have pointed out, if there is a god, that dude knows for sure what exactly it would take to convince me and every other atheist. They can apparently read our minds and see our hearts and all these other weird things. So he knows what can convince me. He knows exactly what to do to make me completely change my mind. And so far has chosen not to do it.
Yeah, that one's really strange, because theists will say that's already been presented to you. And then if you go, well, you believe God's omniscient, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then so he knows prior to him even like sending the signal that it's not going to work.
Right.
He sends
right.
it anyway. So like my conclusion is that's an irrational being that you believe in, right? That's like
it's the like definition Dr. Strange of being checking irrational. Out all the ways to beat Thanos. Like, it's
just, yeah, so like, you already know I'm going to walk past it, not even probably see
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, that to me, I think that is something that's going to compact an issue if you imbue these types of properties to the deity, right? Once you imbue yep. those properties, then yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like the ball is in the theist court, the atheist court. But one thing I want to say, I'm sorry, Brian, something I remembered, I'm open to any other like new methodology or mechanism of truth that we just can't conceive of at the moment. Like I'll leave it up there as a possibility. The way I see this is that me and Forrest are building houses with a hammer, and someone's trying to tell us that, well, there could be another hammer that you could, or another tool you could use. And when I asked them, like, take me to Home Depot and like, let's go buy it, like they couldn't even show me the aisle it's in, or like what materials it's made out of, or like I can't get anything substantive to take it seriously. And then when me and Forrest continue to build our, you know, our buildings and our skyscrapers through this method of science, right? I look over at the other person's lot who's like claiming that they have another way to build all this or to come to knowledge. And I see like their lot's empty and they're kicking rocks and they just believe it. Like they just believe it will happen, but I don't see anything of substance. And it gets really annoying because it seems like those people stand on top of our skyscrapers that we build and shout from the rooftops of them about how we're mistaken. And so it becomes very strange to me because it's like, just take me to Lowe's, right? Like I want to see what the tool is, but nobody ever offers it. So I just go, yeah, I'm not going to believe in that. So you can give me a reason to.
Yeah, there's no question that it is very strange. I agree with you all. And you said, both of you said a bunch of things. It's hard to know where to start. I heard Forrest say that you're not even sure you could be convinced of any evidence. There may be a possibility for that. There may be no way of knowing.
Well, it's just that I don't know what evidence would be sufficient for something like that, because I don't right. know, like if you showed me something that's definitely, wow, amazing, miraculous, how do I know that's not some alien civilization that's come here? You know what I mean? Like, it's how do I know what a god looks like? How do I know what it's so much there?
But doesn't that take the issue of God off the table then, if there can be no, because one of the arguments against God is that you believe, or atheists believe, there's no evidence. But if you're saying, really, I can't trust that there's any evidence anyways, you can't make an argument about evidence. You can't use it as an argument.
That's a really good way. That's a totally understandable way to take what I just said. So let me be a little bit more clear. I'm not saying that evidence doesn't matter, and I'm not saying that there is no good evidence. I'm saying that you know, even like I can for sure be convinced that there's amazing, wonderful, crazy things out there beyond my comprehension. If you show me like any evidence at all for that. Absolutely. The question is, when then do you draw the line between this is this crazy thing or that crazy? So how do you know that it's, you know, the last guy we're talking about, Roland the Closet Goblin. How do you know it's the God of the Bible and not Roland the Closet Goblin who can also do this crazy, you know what I mean? So I'm not saying that I wouldn't be convinced in anything supernatural or anything extraordinary or whatever. I'm just saying that I don't have the comparative way to decipher what that evidence actually means. However, God does. If God exists, God knows exactly what thing to do to make me believe exactly what I need to, and that is what's being withheld us. So like, I'm not saying that I wouldn't believe even in the face of evidence. I'm saying that like, I don't even know what good evidence would look like because it's such a specific, crazy claim. Does that make sense?
That definitely, I like that a lot. But one of you, cool. Both of you, I also said there may be some things that could convince you. I think one of the things said was some evidence about something in the future, some prediction that comes in the about the future that
predictive,
comes true.
Yeah, predictive expectation.
Sure.
Right. So there's two parts of that. First is, who makes that prediction? Where does that prediction come from? Does it materialize? You've obviously seen the apparition standing in front of you saying, I'm God, and this is what's going to happen next Tuesday.
Where, I don't know. It's not my problem. That's the problem if it takes from. On that, whoever wants to take that thesis on, that's going to be their work ahead of them. And if they can do it, that's great. But I think that highlights a really big issue that this, if what we do exist in, say metaphysical naturalism is true, then we're not going to find anything, right? We're only going to have this domain. All the type of arguments for like Platonism or whatever types of views we could just pretty much be rest assured that those don't, you know, there's some language game going on or something that's not really tracking something in the world. I'm just saying hypothetically, because it seems like to me, like that's fine. If it's not the case, I can concede. I don't see a contradiction, right? I can't like give you a logical contradiction until you give me properties of the God. Then I can spell that out. But the general idea, someone's going to have to do the work. They're going to have to assess what the properties are, right? They're not starting on like this blank sheet. They're going to have to like really work hard towards this. And I, like Forrest says, I don't even really know what that would look like, but I'm trying to be open to that type of endeavor if in fact it could exist. I'm very skeptical that it could. I really am. I'm more inclined to think that it's not right going to happen and that there aren't going to be deductive arguments that are successful. But I've changed my mind. I've committed myself to positions that I never thought I would. And that just all it took was presenting arguments or evidence, and I was glad to take them because I have a more defensible position. And that's going to be huge. Yeah. If this is really true and I can look at that and I know I can defend that position because of how obviously true through whatever mechanism, then I would be just ecstatic to take it on because I have a more defensible position than I had prior. But it's not my job to like do that when I don't accept those claims to begin with, right? I would be like in this endless endeavor of having to prove all these other claims. And that's not how like it works, right? So I'd rather just assess the claims as they come to me.
The idea of evidence is not a simple notion. It's not a simple idea because I think most of us look at it simplistically. Like all of a sudden, if some apparition appeared in front of us and said, right now, I'm going to cure world hunger, and world hunger gets cured, then most of us would be pretty convinced that that was something pretty significant. Now, it might be an alien being, of course, but it might be people might call it a higher power. The word God, is, we don't know what that really means, that word is. Some higher power, some incredible force did that, and that's pretty incredible. Most of us would believe in that higher force, whatever
not
it is,
one
even
time.
If it is an alien being.
Not one time. We would all, like, if God wrote, like, we write all, you know, writes the star, or God whispers into everybody's ear with the language that they can understand, or writes
right.
the
sky. Yes, right.
I need to go get an fMRI, right? That's the first thing, because I know that things like this are psychologically explained. Then I can confer with other people. Did you see this? Did you see that? We really wouldn't know what to think yet, but we might have some basis to go off of to maybe investigate it in some way, hopefully. And if we can't, then like all that stuff, like I don't really know how we just attribute it to something when all it takes for that when all it takes for that phenomena to occur is something that can alter the perceptions of agents. I mean, that to me seems to be, could be naturalistically explained. It could be explained by aliens. It could be explained by all sorts of stuff. But guess what? We don't find ourselves in that world. We don't find ourselves in the world where the stars are being rearranged, and we don't have a history of that. And so when I talk about credence that I put, I just don't know why, like if I gave you a bunch of marbles and they're blue marbles and pink marbles and you know, I say they're mixed up and you only pull blue marbles and you just pull blue marbles forever and ever and ever and ever. And then you go, well, what would make you convinced that the next one's going to be red or something? I'd be like, well, I don't have any reason. I have actually really good background data to suggest that it's not going to be red. And so I'm going to take my proportion of what I think and lean it towards that side, because the thing that's being expressed hasn't even come out of the bag or anything to indicate that it ever will come out of the bag. So that's, for me, it's hard for me because I don't know. Some people are more willing to accept those things. I want to see the red thing pulled out of the bag or some reason that I think, like, I have good reason that the next thing is going to pop out will be red and not blue. Right.
And that's a, you know, with, you know, running on that example just a little bit further is, you know, it's entirely possible that there is just a complete statistical anomaly here and that there are so many more red things than blue things in the bag, and that it's just incredible that you've only pulled blue thing. Who knows how that happened? There is a 1 in 10 bazillion chance, but that doesn't change the fact that that's all the data that we have. It's entirely possible that there is some God doing all these things and all the way, but we haven't detected anything like that, and we have no reason to think that any of the detections that we do have are attributed to that. So we have to run with the data that we have. Maybe it's completely crazy statistical unlikelihood that this is the way that it is, but it is the way that it is, and it's what we have to roll with. And I like the term, you know, you've heard, I'm sure, of Occam's razor. If you hear hoofbeats outside, you need to think horses first, not there's a herd of zebras and giraffes. It's a horse hoofbeat, right? And so, like, that's way more of a reason. If you look outside and there are zebras and giraffes, wow, amazing, fantastic. But until you see that, there's no reason to assume that that's what's, you know, and that's the same thing we feel with this God. Is it possible? Sure. Is there maybe some evidence out there we're not noticing? Sure. But until we see that, there's no reason to say that's true any more than there is any other crazy, spiritual, supernatural, ridiculous fairy tale claim. I don't believe in the Easter Bunny for the exact same reason. It's not to make a mockery of it. It's just the exact same line of thinking.
One of the arguments that theists might offer is that the evidence, quote unquote, is in the reality itself, the universe, the beauty of nature, the incredible, I have to admit, the incredible things that have come out of religion, incredible art and literature. It changed the phenomenon of each religion, changed society in dramatic ways. So people would say that's evidence, because if we had more concrete evidence that humans, simple humans like me, would love to have, it would, if we really did have concrete, simple evidence, then none of us, we would just, what would we have to live for? Because
it's underdetermined.
For sure there's a God, and we know for sure there's this God. He's just going to take care of us. I'm not going to do much.
The problem, though, is that
we've got this incredible stuff that's come out of religion. The other is, what kind of, if we had real convincing evidence, give up.
I don't see why that matters. It's just underdetermined. Like, so it's just going to be the evidence there will be underdetermined by good things that come out of completely secular sources that shape society or whatever it might be. I'm not really seeing like why that, like, because all that's going to be asked, I think, in that framework is what's the inference from going from like this thing helps society to it being true, right? That's the inference that would need to follow, because that if they're saying it's evidence or something like that, then test that in some way, presumably, if they mean by evidence. But if they mean like, oh no, there's just this like logical entailment that, you know, if this thing occurs, then it's best explained by a deity. I am not seeing how they could ever make such an inference like that, right? Because it just seems that I could infer the opposite and underdetermine it really quickly.
Because we can't have concrete evidence of a deity. So religious believers say, this is my belief. This is what I, so again, it comes down to faith, and I'm not going to get into those arguments of faith. I know the problem with faith, and we can just,
right.
I know where you often say we can stop the argument here, and I'm not going to go into that. But religious people would say, given that we, simple evidence would, it's impossible. And I see these things, and these things that have come out of religion convince me that it's a good thing. The more religious a community is, the tighter knit that community is, the incredible things they do for each other, support and love and caring all around the world. You can say you're a Catholic, you can walk into some place in some foreign country and go into some church and you're going to be accepted. Remarkable things happen in the name of religion. And
so a couple of things there. Number one, also, like, just, we got to move on. We got to move on to the next caller, but I really want to ask you about that. And then one more other thing you said, just very quickly, as quickly as I can. Yes, some remarkable things come out of religion, including things like community. Also, some horrible, hideous things come out of religion. So if we have to take credit for one, you have to take credit for the other. And also, there's a significant amount of evidence that shows that the less religious a country is, the higher like human rights are, and like the more overall happiness in the population and like equality and social structure like that. A lot of things go up when religion goes down. So if you want to point to community, sure, you can point to community. I'll point to the Spanish Inquisition and we'll see which one of us is more compelling. But like, so that's the one thing. And then the other thing that I have, and if you want, you can address that first and then I'll move on to the other thing. The other thing is going to be the final question I have.
That's a big, long discussion. I mean, I hear you completely. Ridiculous and horrible things have come out of religion too. And of course, people would argue that's not what the founder said, and they're not following what their founder said.
Right. It's a no true Scotsman thing. So really, it brings me to my last thing though, that just really quickly, like you've said a lot of stuff here that we've heard, you know, a million times before about like the utility of religion and about different things that you can see that are like benefits and like ways that it makes people feel this and that and the other, and we don't really have evidence and we, you know, faith is this and that. Like my whole question is, would you apply this exact same line of thinking to absolutely anything else ever? Would you ever say there can't be concrete evidence for, pick your favorite, gravity? There can't be. It's just a thing. Look at how good civilizations that believe in gravity are, and therefore we're just going to roll with it. Like any of the things that you presented today, the entire call, you've been on for, you know, 18 minutes, this entire call, is there a single one of the things you said today that you would apply to any other thing ever?
I would have to think about that.
That's a problem. That's my issue.
Reality. And gravity will be, actually, we found out there is a basis to gravity. I'm not sure that's a good example. I need to think.
Right, but that's what I'm saying.
We found that out independently too, right?
Yeah, we didn't find that out through faith. We found that out through experimentation. So like, you know, we pick, you know, you take gravity, you say the speed of light, say vaccines, say, you know, the other planets existing, say what, anything, not even just like scientific stuff. The fact that my toaster is in my kitchen right now, do I believe that based on faith, or have I gone in there and used it in the past? You know what I mean? So like this, just anything else at all in your life, would you ever use the same kind of thinking that you're using this religion? And I think even if you have to think about that for a second, that's a problem.
Probably not.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing. It's like, it's understandable to say there's special evidence. There are certain things in the universe that require special kinds of evidence, special kind of thinking. Sure. But I like, there's never a time in my life where I'm going to have a different set of rules for something than I do for everything else. You know what I mean? It just doesn't really work that way.
No, of course not. It shouldn't. Okay.
So anyway, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Brian. You've been a fantastic caller.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, man.
Okay. I hate the beauty, like, but they look at the beauty thing and all that. I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's easy to select that, and I'd tell you to go walk down like a children's hospital or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, where you're gonna really, really feel some way that's not like, look at the trees, how great they are, right? You're gonna see something that in my opinion, you're like avoiding to see, right? Because it just drives nothing, not against Brian. Yeah. It's just the general conversation when people bring that up. It's one of those things where I'm just like, oh my gosh.
It bugs me too. It bugs me too. We got time for probably one more call, but before we get there, by now you, the gracious audience, probably know that the AXB store is running again, and we've been featuring special limited time items each month. I've been talking about them several months in a row. We also realize that many of you may have missed out on some of the great items that we've offered. So for the month of December, we are opening up the ACA merchandise vault. Did you know we had a vault? I didn't either. And giving you limited time access to all of our special designs from the past year. Simply visit tiny.cc/theACAvault. To see all of our past offerings. We're even going to let you have 10% on your entire purchase. Save 10% off your entire purchase just by using the discount code THEVAULT, all in caps. But remember, when the year ends, so does this special offer. It's going to be really exciting. Right now below the chat, you'll see that there is a Donate Now box. Donations made there mean that the ACA will get 100% of the proceeds. So if you want to help out and you want to donate, but you don't necessarily need a bunch of extra t-shirts and whatnot, you can do that. YouTube does not take a cut of that, and it's the best way that you could possibly support us. And finally, we want to send a big thank you to the crew who helps put this show together every single week. The crew is fantastic. Show us a crew shot. Put the crew up on the thing. Show us a crew. Look at them. Look how great they are. Oh, they're wonderful. Thank you so much, crew, for everything you do. You make this show possible, and that has helped a lot of people. We end in 20 minutes, so we've got time for one, maybe two more calls. So I've got Mark, pronouns he, him, calling in from New York, says that human beings are more than animals. Mark, how are you doing today?
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going really well, dude.
So if I could just pick up on, good. I like the show so far, but really interesting. Good callers.
Thank you.
I wanted to pick up on the last question that I think you asked the gentleman who was just on, and I'm not sure if I fully caught the question correctly, but I would posit that if I understood the question correctly, I would posit when it comes to something like does somebody love you, right? Mm-hmm. If you're asking yourself that question, how would you ever establish the answer to that question? You're going to base it in part on evidence, based on how they act towards you, your relationship with that person. But essentially, you're never going to have a definitive answer. It's not a scientific question you can answer definitively. And so you're going to be going on faith, essentially.
No,
but that is going
to
be...
You don't have access to people's mental states. Evidence-based. You don't have access to people's mental states.
I'm sorry?
I don't know why that... You don't have access to people's mental states. I don't know why that...
Correct.
Like, of course, you don't.
Yeah, I would faith. Draw...
You have a background. It doesn't mean you have to have certainty. That I don't know why that would be required. It's not like not a little certain that all of a sudden faith gets snuck in there. You have a background information that you're going off of, so it wouldn't be faith. Faith doesn't require background information. It just requires the trust in the proposition to be true. That's it. If you add stuff to that, it's no longer faith. Once you add stuff to that, it's no longer faith. You're giving reasons for why you believe.
Well, I think it's just right. Maybe I misunderstood the question, but when you're referring to something like you said, like what's inside someone's heart, what's inside someone's mind, you're saying that there's no element in having faith in the outcome of what that might be.
It's not about faith. It's about, sorry, just
I was going to say, like,
be clear.
Well, go ahead.
There's a background information set that's there. I'm not pulling it out of, I just really trust that Forrest loves me, right? Like, it would be based on whether or not we've had a relationship. There's things that he's done for me and they've expressed to me that that's what they do when they show people love, right? All these stuff, like, it's not like it's just, I believe the proposition and I really just trust it without reasons or justification. That's like totally divorced from that, in my opinion, but maybe Force has a different opinion on
that. Yeah, I would say that it's kind of stretching the word faith quite a bit to say that. Cause like, you know, as you pointed out, faith is something that has no evidence. It's completely just trust-based. And like, for me, it's like when people say, you know, you have faith in science or something like that. You know, I have my cell phone here. If I drop it, I don't have faith in gravity. I don't have faith that it's going to fall at 9.81 meters per second squared. I have repeated testable evidence from the past, and I can apply that to the future. So I have reasonable expectations. You could even maybe use the word trust. You know, I have a reasonable expectation of the normal force. That's why I'm not falling through my chair at this moment. So I have reasonable expectation. I have a trust that my wife loves me because of the things that she does, because of the things that she says, because I believe she tells me the truth. She doesn't lie to me. And so when she tells me she loves me, I assume she's telling me the truth then as well. She doesn't have a motive to lie about that. She doesn't gain anything from lying to me about that. It would make her life exponentially worse to just say that she loves me and be in a relationship with me when she doesn't. She could be out with somebody that she does love. What a stupid thing for her to do. Like, that, there's a million reasons why I can say I have a reasonable, you know, belief, a justified expectation in that. I think it's a big stretch to call that.
Okay, well then I think the distinction is we're using the word faith differently, because I'm a skeptical person. I've been agnostic and atheist for a good chunk of my life. And what has brought me over to the theist camp, so to speak, is not blind faith. It's not a desire to just wish that was the case. I've looked at the evidence, I looked at the arguments, and I concluded that although I don't know for certain that it is more probable that God exists. And I base that on the evidence. Just like you point to things like when you mentioned,
what's the evidence?
What is the evidence?
Yeah, we've done a show for 20 years asking this question.
Okay, I wrote down a list of things here that I would say, and I would almost put it in the reverse, which is atheism fails to provide an adequate explanation for the following thing. I wrote
atheism,
down the
contingent existence
of the universe.
Hold on. How does atheism?
I'm sorry to say, I don't mean to cut you off. I apologize, but you've already blown it if that's what you're starting with, because atheism isn't an explanatory device. Atheism is simply the position on one single question: do you believe in a God? And we say no. So like, we're not providing explanations on anything. We're not trying to explain. That's not what we're here for. If I tell you there's an L sitting behind these bookshelves, you can say yes, there is, or you can say no, there isn't, or you can say I don't believe you. If you say yes, there is, or no, there isn't, need evidence for that. But if you just say I don't believe you, then you're just waiting on me to give you evidence.
Yeah,
and that's what we're doing with God. We're not saying there is no God. We're saying we don't believe there is one, because we have no reason there is. That there's nothing else beyond that in atheism.
Yeah,
if you want to talk about science, sure. But That's not what we're here
for. If you bring, Mark, if you bring up evidence, or if you're talking about evidence and the first thing out of your mouth is about atheists, what you're saying is like, well, there's these people that believe, like, if you start out with you for the reasons why you believe, you've already shot yourself in the foot completely. Yeah. Because I have nothing to do with what the evidence is, or why you believe, or why you think you're justified. So atheism wouldn't have to do with that. If you're going to go into a worldview comparison, then I'm just taking that as an abductive method. You're saying what's most likely the case, but that's going to fail very quickly, right? Because you have a lot of extra stuff in there that's probably not going to be told if you're a Christian. We haven't heard anything about the incarnation, the Trinity, angels, eternal angel demon wars, like all this extra stuff, just per Occam's razor or like parsimony, we just shave all that shit off, right? So I don't really know, like, if we're going to go into the worldview comparative notion, it's going to be clearly favored towards naturalism, right? Because we want to add all this extra stuff.
Well, that's what I'm taking issue with. And maybe I shouldn't have said atheism. Maybe I should have said, like, material naturalism or something like that, because that's what you have. I mean, each of our worldviews...
No, your evidence is you. I'm going to cut you off. I'm sorry, Mark. I'm going to cut you off every time you do this. You have evidence. Me being a materialist, me being a property dualist, me being an idealist has nothing to do with the evidence of why God exists, right? I could just imagine I'd like died, right? I'm dead. Now give the evidence, or all atheists are gone, right? What's the evidence? That's not going to all of a sudden do anything to change the view, right? So what's the evidence? If you talk about atheist or materialist or naturalist, I'm just going to cut you off because you've already messed up. It's your view. This has nothing to do with your view.
No, I understand that. And when in answering that question, there's only a couple of different ways you could go about answering it. One is you could say something like God is directly experienced by the person, and that gives them a basis to believe, right? But the atheist wants more.
Cross that one off. What's the next one?
They don't want to.
I don't believe that.
That doesn't work for us. So yeah. What's the next one?
That one's clearly false.
I would then argue is the closest thing to something empirical, I would say, from a historical perspective or historical evidence, is the life and resurrection of Jesus. And you know, you could have that debate back and forth about whether.
Yeah, I do. I take a very specific position on this. Jesus was an apocalyptic preacher, right? Mark 9:1, Mark 13:30. In our earliest traditions in Mark, we get a very heavily apocalyptic message that's multiply attested in Mark, M, L, and Q. And then in Luke and John, we get a de-emphasizing of this apocalyptic message, where the kingdom of God is no longer supposed to be this like thing that's supposed to happen in the disciples' lifetime. Truly, I tell you, none of you here will be standing here will taste death before you see the kingdom of God come in power, right? That gets changed and muted in Luke, where now it's not something that will be seen or observed. Luke 17:20-21, if you're interested. And the whole point of this is my view on Jesus, there's really no convincing me that he resurrected or anything or predicted his death, because everything that I take as the historical Jesus, which I do accept exists, all of that shows a first century Palestinian apocalyptic message that he thinks was going to happen during his time, and it didn't happen. And so for me, I can conclude Christianity is pretty clearly false. So like the resurrection is not going to help in any way. It's because it's not even a historical fact, right? So I don't know what you're basing it off of, just to say this book says this thing. My view is going to be based on very specific historical criterions that what I think shows good reason why Christianity is false. So the resurrection is going to be a non-starter, at least for me, maybe for us, but I just
it's
garbage.
It's definitely a non-starter for me as well, because like that's the thing about these Bible stories, is that you have this whole body of claims here in the Bible. And if you can prove one of them, that nothing festive. So even if you can prove the resurrection of Jesus, wow, radical. You have a guy who rose from the dead in 3 days. You know, people come back from the dead in hospitals all the time, but hey, man, it happened this time and it took a really long time to do it. Incredible. Cool. You haven't proven that he did any other miracles. You haven't proven that he was the Son of God. You haven't proven that there's a God for him to be the son of. You haven't proven any of the claims about the future that he made. You haven't proven any of the, anything else besides the fact that this dude came back from the dead and his name happened. Like that does nothing for
you. Well, what I would say to that is that what you would be dealing here is not with the resurrection really of any, you know, any person. This is a resurrection of somebody who spoke really with an unparalleled authority, that he was speaking with a divine nature. And so if that person was resurrected, I think it is completely different. And I would challenge, I would say this, if you gentlemen think Jesus existed, I would ask ask you to look at whether the crucifixion happened.
I accept it. Yeah, I accept it. I do. No, I already accept it. I already accept the crucifixion likely happened.
Okay,
I agree with pretty basic facts. I agree. Okay, he was probably betrayed by Judas Iscariot. That passes the criterion of dissimilarity. It's not something Christians would want to have shown that Jesus didn't have authority over somebody, right? So it's dissimilar to what early Christians would want. And so we can use these criterions. The three that I'm talking about are independent attestation, the criterion of dissimilarity, and contextual credibility. And those are really important. My view on this, it's not like my view. It's a pretty common non-Christian, or even depending on, some Christians go down a different view called preterism. That's a whole separate topic. But a pretty majority scholar view, or at least it's not a fringe view, is what I'm expressing. And the reason why it's important is when I look at the Bible or I look at Jesus, it's not enough for you to cite like a proof text of verses that say, you know, the Son of Man needs to go to Jerusalem to die and raise in 3 days, right? Because those are the things I'm going to contest. I'm going to say, I accept Jesus existed. I accept he was crucified. I accept these things. But the reason that I accept what Jesus likely said in Mark 9:1 and Mark 13:30 has to do with the fact that it's our earliest traditions. They pass dissimilarity. It's not something Christians would want to make up. The early part of his ministry is with an apocalyptic preacher, John the Baptist. The later end of it, after he dies, has Paul in 1 Thessalonians 4 and 1 Corinthians 15 expressing that he thinks it's going to happen in his lifetime. And so for me, when I look at all of those historical facts, I say, well, what's the key to the middle? Well, it's clearly that it was an apocalyptic message, and it wasn't something that was supposed to concern people 2,000 years from now. It was something that was supposed to happen right now. And that passes contextual credibility, because we know that Jews at the time, during the intertestamental period, were being like, it was the Babylonians, the Assyrians, Ptolemaics, Seleucid kings, right? All of these people just oppressing them. And so the entire message through that intertestamental period was, hold on a little longer, just hold on a little longer, because soon enough, the powers of evil will be overthrown and God's kingdom will come. And so when Jesus expresses that in, you know, first century Palestine, it completely fits the historical data. And so my thing is that Jesus in the historical context is one of the best ways to show that Christianity is not true. And so if we're going to have a conversation about it, I need people who have these, who want to have this discussion, to invoke historical criterions. Otherwise they can just pull out any verse that they want. Right. And so that's the problem I have, is I don't think Christians do this.
That's right. I actually agree with that. And I would say that there was no concept of a Jewish Messiah that was crucified and rose again. That's not a Jewish belief. And so, and I think from a historical perspective, you sort of have this, you have sort of historians and scholars of the New Testament who will agree on certain facts, but they just, I think methodology limits them in terms of taking the next step and saying he was resurrected, because, you know, they're kind of confined.
The reason why historians don't appeal to miracles in anything, right? Just think about what the scope, of history is. It's an abductive method, meaning that it's trying to find out what's most probable. What is the resurrection? Isn't that by definition something that's not likely to occur? Very improbable of an event. So it just lays outside the scope of what abductive methodology entails, which is we want to figure out what's most likely probable. You can't take the most improbable thing that you're defining as the most likely thing from the historical context. That's why scholars who do believe in this admit that they have to take it on faith. They can't take it from a historical account, unless you want to go with the minimal facts argument, which doesn't show anything, right? That just is a Greg and grant every one of those, and it doesn't get you to a bodily resurrection or even it being
I have a slightly different line of questioning for Mark really quickly, because we were very quickly running out of time. I just want to ask, because like you've hit the nail on the head 17 different times here, J. Mike, but I just want to make sure I like to give a more concrete thing. You know, we're talking these miracles of the Bible, the 2,000 years old, and now we have the translation of the translation of the reinterpretation of the 15 of the new translation thing from a long time ago. And there's a lot of questions here that we can ask, but I wonder if you've heard about C.S.I. Baba. He was a healer. He was a before. He lived in India in 2011. So he lived from 1926 to 2011. And he did incredible things. Like, we can look up the miracles that he performed. He did spiritual healing. He healed people. He was able to produce rings and necklaces and watches from ashes. He was able to light candles with water. It says here that he resurrected people. He was capable of clairvoyance. He was able to see the future. There are countless, you can go on his website here. There are still people today saying that he's come to them in dreams and saved them from danger, that he has healed their sickness and their pain because they prayed to him. This is a man who lived in our lifetime that apparently did all these things. He has millions of followers online, and in India, he had millions of people show up to his funeral. Like, this guy is all over the place, and he's done all these incredible miracles. And he himself said he was a reincarnation of another great healer named something else, Sai Baba. So, like, why don't you believe in this dude when we have pictures of him and we have millions of people who saw that he resurrected somebody? But you do believe in a 1,000-year-old book that some dude did some.
Can you hear me? Sorry.
I
cut out for a sec.
Yeah.
I have heard of that gentleman. I heard of him. I'm not extremely familiar with him. I think you have to answer that question objectively. I mean, I'm a skeptical person, so I take each case separately. And when I look at the topic we were just discussing about Jesus, it's within a larger framework where I start with this idea that there is a God, and then I kind of work from there.
Born in India, believe that this guy might be real, then you believe in him, right?
If there was, if there was evidence, I would look at.
There's millions of people who say it happened.
I have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure there was like people that were highly educated, even from like the U.S. that were going over there because they believed what was being expressed. Right? We don't have any evidence for the claim that Sathya Sai Baba was doing what was being claimed. Right? We don't have that, but you wouldn't take the story on it, right? You wouldn't accept that. And to Forrest's point, that has let's just say it's 100,000 people or something, right? I mean, it has significance. I don't know what would be different, except we're actually somewhat, we're not 2,000 years removed from it, right?
Right. Believe in this book that's 2,000 years old because you were born in a society where it's normal to believe in this book. You were raised around Christians, people who believed in this stuff. You were probably taught this as a kid. And now look at you. You believe it. You're so lucky that out of the 8 billion people on the planet, you were born in the right country, in the right area of the country, with the right family who believed in the right version of the right religion, that you now know the actual truth. However, here are millions and millions of people who believe something very different about a guy who just existed a few years ago. Why is it not relevant to you? Why don't you know that much about this guy that you think you've heard of him, but you're not sure? Why isn't this the biggest story in your world right now, that this dude did all the things that Jesus did, and somehow he's not even a blip on your radar?
With no mythicists, by the way.
That's true.
But one thing I would take issue with, I take your point, but what I would take issue with is, and I think atheists have this misunderstanding, that the theist is sort of putting the cart before the horse. Like, they're starting with...
Mark, how is this answering
for us? They were born that way.
I'm getting mildly frustrated, because I don't know how this is answering what he's saying, what he asked.
I thought I had answered that by saying each claim I would have to examine the evidence for the claim. I mean, I don't know how
so else why do, when I said that a minute ago about Jesus, you said the resurrection is proof of all the other things, and I said no, the resurrection, even if you could prove that, is just one thing and doesn't say anything else. And you said, yeah, but if Jesus is actually this guy speaking with such authority, then that means the resurrection actually proof of all this other stuff. So why don't we do this here? If you could prove that Sai Baba was this awesome person, he said a lot of amazing things and spoke with great authority. Millions of people, really had their lives changed by him. Why don't you apply the same line of thinking to him that you were doing for Jesus here?
I think I was mentioning why Jesus, when I said he was speaking with the authority, I was trying to describe why I think that holistically that story makes sense on some level. You don't have to buy it, you know, but there's sort of a holistic nature to that story. This person you're talking about in India is a totally separate case. I'm not, you know, familiar with it enough to opine on it. It doesn't sound...
The woman in adultery is a good story, right? The woman in adultery is a good story. Guess what? That's in the latest like manuscripts that we have, right? Scholars agree that doesn't go back to anything with Jesus, right? So this is the whole important point about like, you can pick things out, right? But like, I'm going to come back with the historical basis that, you can appeal to some story, but I mean, I just don't get why anybody should care about that when it suffers
what about Socrates?
Historical issues, and we don't have the historical issue suffering in the case that Forrest presented, right?
What about Socrates? There's no reason to actually exist. He was probably just a character made up by Plato just to tell stories. And yet we have the Socratic method. Socrates is the basis of a lot of modern philosophy. It doesn't matter that he existed or not, because he has all these amazing stories, these amazing ideas, these amazing lectures that he supposedly gave that we wrote down about. Do you believe in Socrates? Does it matter? Or is it just a story you can draw something?
And I like philosophy. And no, I'm like, I, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't matter. Doesn't make it true.
I think, you know, the historicity of each of these individuals has to be independently established. And I think truth matters. I don't think we should just believe things because they tell a nice story. I mean, I want to know what's true. That's what's motivating. You know, so I think having these conversations, I think, are helpful, because at least we're able to test each other. If you're just in an echo chamber and you're not testing your own theory, and reasons, you know, you're kind of, I think ultimately, like, you're very likely to fall into the trap of believing something that isn't true. I mentioned Jesus because you guys want something tangible. And when the caller gives something like an abductive line of reasoning, there's kind of pushback, like, well, we don't, you know, it seems like the very common response is like, we just don't know. And
no, I gave a very specific pushback, right? Like, I've looked into, like, if you want to have a conversation on, we can't because we're running up to the end of the show, but if you want to call back and we have this conversation, I can list out all the reasons. I'm not going to just appeal to what like scholars say. We can do this together. We can like look at this ourselves and go through, because my response back to you about the Jesus thing was, we need to look at the historical context of these verses. You can't just cite this verse and go, that's what happened, or that's on the lips of Jesus. The whole important point is, what words were put on the lips of Jesus versus ones we can be reasonably confident that he expressed somewhat like. And from my view, we do have a pretty good criterion. Like I gave, independent attestation or dissimilarity, and we can go back and we can look and we can go, wow, okay, it passes all of these. So we have a higher probability that Jesus was an apocalyptic preacher who was talking about the end times in his lifetime, and it didn't occur. And so, I mean, we could just give an argument. Like, I could just render an argument now. If Christianity is true, then the kingdom of heaven would have been established during the disciples' lifetime, as per Mark 9:1 and Mark 13:30. It is not the case that the kingdom of heaven was established during the disciples' lifetime. Conclusion, Christianity is false, right? And I'm going to give you the historical evidence on why I think that's the best abductive case. If you just come back to me and saying, well, it says this verse or it's nice there, my first question to you is, okay, does it pass these historical criterions? Do we have a good reason to think that these were actually the words of Jesus or part of his ministry versus what later Christians or scribes had theological reasons to insert in, right? To deal with community issues at the time, because that's the evidence. The evidence shows.
I agree with that. I agree with that. It does have to pass the historical muster. And, you know, I think that the burden on the person arguing against the resurrection is to explain how the burial grounds were found empty, how the disciples had experiences of the risen Jesus, and then the origin of their belief.
It's probably a good idea that they explain why each one of the different books has a different account of finding that thing empty, whether it was, you know, one woman or two women or 1,000 women, and if they told nobody or if they told a bunch of people, and if they saw him rise in the air, if they saw him in the thing, or one of them had a ham sandwich. Like, there's a million different accounts of the
one
same event.
One said stay in Jerusalem for 40 days, one didn't, right? So.
Yep.
One's at one the resurrection. Wait, but just when did it happen? did it happen in like John's account where he has a theological reason to make it during the slaughtering of the lambs to show a metaphorical and symbolic notion that Jesus is the Lamb of God who died for our sins? Or do you think that the account that I think it's Mark or Matthew that has it prior, right, to the Passover, right? They're both in different times. You couldn't look at the resurrection accounts and have reasonable expectation for the events, let alone the outcome that we're just supposing is true. But
I mean, well, to me, I think there are differences in the accounts, but I think for the essence of the accounts, there's sort of a common thread among.
If I give you a map, and it says my house is here, and then another map I give you says it's in a different location, which one's reliable, and how do we know?
Well, if I say you live in New York, and yet you know what does that mean? Does that mean the Bronx? Does that mean Long Island?
Yeah, I'll say Georgia or New York.
Because I do live in New York.
Yeah, I think Georgia or New York. I think there's differences, there's huge differences in our manuscripts, in the gospel accounts themselves, that it would be like me handing you a map of that I live in Florida versus a map that I live in Georgia. Right, they're not the same. They can't reconcile them. And so the question is, which one should we accept before we can even talk about whether or not the resurrection is even is something we should consider? We need to know how do we even know which account's reliable? What are we even going off of?
Well, look, you raise good questions. I'm not a biblical scholar, you know, by any means. But again, you know, when it comes to my personal faith, that I look to science, I look to philosophy, metaphysics, that's where I start from. And
I look at philosophy and metaphysics too, and I don't see it.
I remain open to changing my mind. So I feel instinctually that there has to be a God. That could be wrong. That could just be, you know, a belief that's just misguided. So I'm sort of fighting against that internal, swimming upstream, so to speak, on some level. But I do try to remain objective. And, it just seems to me that there's, when you look at sort of all the interconnected issues from morality to consciousness to the origin of life, it's literally endless. Like, why does mathematics?
Yeah, and there's philosophical views that are naturalistic views that completely contain all of those issues, right? There's thousands of years of Western philosophical thought that whether that might be valuable to somebody or not, there's answers to those things. I was saying a second ago. It's not monopolized to theism. It's not. And I'd argue theism entails morality anyway, but that's a whole other question.
I actually agree with it. I mean, I think there's good arguments on both sides. Where I get lost a little bit is when a lot of times you hear the atheists say, like, there's no evidence, there's no argument that lead me to
think about it, though. I mean, we asked you for evidence, and we didn't get any, and that's tied to the frustration of the atheists. They'll ask, and they don't get anything that seems to be.
We also gave you the exact same evidence that you gave us about a different person, and you just kind of dismissed him out of hand. So, like, you understand where we're coming from now? The same reason why you don't believe in every other possible God is why we don't believe in yours. The same evidence that applies to every other religion, every other belief, also applies to yours. And you're giving us the exact same arguments that we get from Muslim people and from Hindu people and from every other religion under the sun. And they all don't work the exact same way. So there's no, you said there's good arguments on both sides. I don't agree with you. I think that there is, here's evidence for this thing. Here is not evidence for this thing. Pick which one matters. And as long as you care that what you believe in is true, then you're going to have to be honest and just say, I don't have evidence for this. So there's no reason for me to believe it.
Yeah, a good argument would entail like a valid, sound argument with the conclusion that generates exists. I don't think that argument has been put forth, at least yet.
Anyway, Mark, we've been going for a long time, about 30 minutes. I wanted to hear why human beings are more than just animals, but we're way past the point where we could get to that. But we've got to let you go because we're out running overtime. We got to end the show because people got things to do. But I appreciate you calling in. Please call again if you want to talk about this more. If you want to tell me why you think a human is not an animal, I'd love to hear it. That's my whole business. We had like six other people waiting in the call screen. We went kind of long on our calls today, but I'm cool with it. We had some good conversations. So if you didn't get in today, please please call back. Please talk to us next time. You know, we would love to talk to you. We just have a lot of other people to talk to as well.
I do that.
Thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Please visit our website at atheist-community.org for the latest on what's been happening. Feel free to contact TV at atheist-community.org. Mike, I always appreciate getting the chance to co-host you. You're fantastic. Do you have anything particular going on that you want to tell people about before we wrap up?
Nothing other than just send your, atheist prayers my way for my presentation tomorrow.
Love that. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate it. It's been a phenomenal show. Remember, Roland loves you. And if you leave a Subway sandwich in your closet and it's still there in 30 minutes, that means he really loves you and you can eat the sandwich and feel his love. That's how we worship Roland. So it's all about, he doesn't want your worship. He's a good dude. So thank you so much for tuning in, and Roland bless. Bye-bye. What will it take for you to start opening your eyes, to start questioning the bullshit everyone around you buys? You think it's any of your business what goes on between my thighs? I wonder when we'll be rid of your eyes. It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.